My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the continuation of a step series. I don't know how many of you all know this. I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981. So I've been around for a little while. You can tell, as Ray O'Keefe used to say, you can tell by looking at me, I've been somewhere for a while. I had the blessing of one of the blessings you get to have in AA. You know, it's really available to everybody. That's the sad part. The sad part is available to everybody. But you know how alcoholics are, you know. We're defiant, and we go our own way, and nobody's going to tell us what to do. One of the great benefits is I learned a long time ago that the person you'll be 5 years from now will depend greatly upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And the truth of the matter is the books you read pretty much depend upon who you hang out with. And how you think, depends upon who you hang out with. It really does. And I was blessed. I don't want to take any credit for anything I do that's good, because I lived with me for a long time. I came in when I was 31. I'm 62 now. And so I know who I really am when I'm in charge. I know who I hang out with when I'm in charge. I know who I make friends with when I'm in charge. I know the behavior I get involved in when I'm in charge. So I don't want to say it's because I thought this thing up. You know what I mean? Somehow, some way, and I put the whole blame on God. I give him all the credit. I was allowed to be attracted. You know, they say it's a program of attraction. You know, not promotion. I was attracted to these men like Ray O'Keefe, like Joe Snyder, you know, like Eddie Edwards. I mean, these men and women, but mostly the men for me that had something I wanted, and I'm quite sure I didn't even know what they had or how to get it. I know I wanted it. Almost like if you see a guy with a brand new car, or you see a guy with a good-looking gal, or you see a guy with somebody, you know, listen, the concept that we desire to have something, you know, isn't that what it says? Isn't that the step before the steps? If you want what we have? I mean, that's the whole motor on this thing, right? If the motor's not working, you're not going to get it. The whole motor says the step before the step is if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Then you're not even ready to do this thing until you find... listen, I'm just reporting. You can sit back there and say, who is this guy? He doesn't know who he's... listen, you can read the book and you can twist the... I know enough about alcoholics where you can twist the words around, make them say what you want them to say, but it says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And what happens is that presupposes two things, that somebody in here, you're not going to be a loner. As much as you want to be a loner, as much as you want, you don't want to listen to anybody, as much as you want to say, you can't tell me what to do, do your own program, as much as you want to do all that and do this thing on your own and not listen to anybody, the truth of the matter is the people that make this thing generally link up with people that have something that they want. And they recognize it, and they're willing to go to any length to get it. And any length to get it, let me tell you something, is not climbing Mount Everest. I'm going to tell you what any length to get it is. And, you know, you may not think this is a big deal, but it's a huge deal. Any length to do it, get it is, you ready for this? To do what you're told. You think that's a big deal for alcoholics? To do what you're told. It's to get a sponsor, and you do what he tells you to do. Even when you think he's full of crap, even when you think he's stupid, even when you get mad at him, you throw down, and you do this, and you do that, to basically listen to him and do what you're told. And that may not seem like a big deal, but I'll tell you what it's the difference between. It's the difference between staying sober and getting drunk. It's the difference between having a joyous life and being happy about your sobriety, which is important. You know, it says later on in our book, it says, now and then, a drinker being dry for the moment, we don't even know whether that's 40 years or 40 days or whatever it is, says feel better, look better, having a better time, you know, there's a vision for you. You know, I'm not worried, I don't miss alcohol alone at all. He says, we laugh at such Sally. We know he'll go back to drinking again because he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he'll play the old game again. And I you know, one of the benefits of hanging around for 31 years is not only that I can see this thing, you know, because the whole thing is experience. I mean, I guess my entire life, like most alcoholics, I now, one of the blessings of being in Alcoholics Anonymous is you realize that that we're all twins. You know, you come in here thinking they'll never understand me. Nobody knows how I feel. Nobody's been through what I've been through. I'm absolutely totally unique. You kill people with your uniqueness. anybody who tries to come back up and talk to you, say, well, I can understand what you think, knowing how you, but if you knew what my divorce was like, if you knew what my parents were like, if you know how many times I tried and it didn't work out, you know, you'd understand what my problems are. So thanks for your advice. But why don't you go screw yourself, because you don't really understand me, because you don't really know me, because only I know me, and I am so involved in me, and I am so different from you and different from anybody else that there's no, what's the sense in talking, because nobody could ever understand you. Well, one of the benefits of coming in here is you go from that way of thinking. You not only go from the way of thinking, hopefully, prayerfully, where you go from the way of thinking of, I can't see not drinking. I mean, I can't see, I can, you know, that thinking you have where I can never see not drinking. I gotta drink. I gotta get angry. I gotta be depressed. You'd be depressed too. You'd be angry too. That's my personality. You go from that way of thinking to all of a sudden, a few weeks later, way of thinking, I can't see drinking again. Like a complete switch around. It says ideas, emotions, and the attitudes of these men are switched off to the side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And one of the things that hopefully goes over a period of time is the thinking that precedes coming in here, which is, nobody could ever help me. I'm all alone. It's hopeless because nobody could possibly understand how I feel and why I feel, to the sense when you first come in here and say, these people are just like me. Now, hopefully, as you go along in this thing and you start exposing yourself, not in the physical way, exposing yourself to yourself and becoming transparent and seeing your motives and seeing why you do things you do, why you get in trouble the way you get in trouble, why you make the choices you make, when things start getting clear, you start becoming spiritually clear. You know, there's material laws and there's spiritual laws. This is all about spiritual laws. Once you start getting spiritually clear, you if you're not spiritually clear, if you're spiritually blinded, you start bumping into the furniture of the world. You know, you start falling into the potholes of the world. You know, you start tripping over stuff. If you're not spiritually discerning, you know, that happens. And to the extent that you become spiritually discerning about yourself and you understand yourself and why you think and why you have these feelings, why you have emotions, what's going on, you can see the problems. You can see exactly why you do the things you do, and you start acting differently, and you tend to glide through life a little bit differently. And not only that, the beauty of it is you tend to be able to get that fantastic gift of discernment in other people. You can actually sponsor people, and they'll tell you stuff. They'll say stuff to you, and you don't even see stuff they don't even see. Some guy with 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, or whatever it is will tell you something, and you're not even thinking about what he's telling you, because what he's telling you is crap. It's the bullshit, you know. It's the story that he's been telling everybody all his life. It's the story he's been telling him all his life. Why he has to drink at 30 days? Why he has to do this and why he has to do that? And you know it's crap because you know yourself. You know why you did it. You know what you said. You've been through it, and you know now what the deal is. So you know it's crap. So you can actually see through him like a pane of glass, and you know why he's really angry. You know why he's really upset. And as you want to know the funny thing, if you tell him, if you say, "Let me tell you what the real problem is. This is the problem," he'll get mad at you. Because the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. You know, it's like the old saying: "The truth, you can't handle the truth." But, you know, if he sticks around, if he comes back and you're a sponsor and he wants what you have, you know, he starts thinking about it, and one day he'll tell you he used to hate you, but now he loves you. Because that's what happens. We start learning about ourselves. And the more we learn about ourselves and how we think, and the more you listen to people in AA, and the more you sponsor people, and I've sponsored quite a few and worked with quite a few and went to quite a few AA meetings over 31 years, the more you see that chances are, if I had a thought, you guys had a thought. If I had a feeling, you guys had a feeling. If I had a motivation for something, you guys have the same motivation. And you can tell me all you want about what you think is really going on. You don't have a clue. I know what's going on because I've been there. I've done that. So experience is the great teacher. And you take a guy like me, you know, they say, and I believe this to be true, that alcoholics have some sort of ego problem. Now, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what the ego is or the it or something like this. But it apparently has something to do with thinking about yourself a lot. It has something to do with being selfish and self-centered, right? You know, it says driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. You know, and then it says, an alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. You know, we got to. Would you rather be right or happy? I want both. Well, the problem is you'll never be happy if you got to be right, because if you got to be right, then you always have to win the argument, which means you always have to have the last word, which means you're going to get into a fight and you're going to be pissed off and everything like that. So somewhere along the line, you're just going to have to make a choice between right and happy. Don't you feel sorry for the person who can't choose the right deal? You know, we're people that never choose happy. We always choose right. And then wonder why we're not happy. And we don't even see that. We don't even see that deal. We're so spiritually blind to that. If somebody tries to tell us what's going on, we'll say, what are you, crazy? We don't even understand that deal. You know what? Because it's like being right-handed. We think, it's like, I'm a right-handed guy. I pick up the book with my right hand. I eat with my right hand. I do everything with my right hand. You tell me, this is my right hand. I'm doing things with my right hand is my only normal way of living. It says, our alcoholic thinking, what does it say about alcohol? It says, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. That's why. We like the effect. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. You drink because you can't stand being sober. You know, somehow, some way, you may get a relief here and there, but the bottom line is it's never good enough. There's always something missing. There's always something you got to add on. You can't stand being sober. That's what we drink. We drink for the effect. No. My deal with an alcoholic is no woman, no car, no amount of money, no nothing. No job ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks, and so I drank it. And it worked quickly, you know. And, you know what the deal is with most of us. Alcohol stops working. And the real problem for most of us, if it's not like me, it stops working about 10 years before you realize it stops working. And you hurt a lot of people, and you go to jail, and your life falls apart. And finally, you come in here, hopefully ready to hear some radical stuff about this program and about what's really going on here. And so I come in here, and I'm right-handed, and this is the way I think. I mean, this is the way I think. I don't even think, I don't need a book. I don't need to go to meetings to think the way I think. I don't need a book to tell me that it's your fault. I don't need a book to tell me I'm not to blame. I don't need a book to tell me you don't understand. I mean, I got guys I sponsored 20 years, you know, 15 years, you know, 25 years. You know, I'll tell them the reason you did it because you're selfish, and they'll say, you don't understand. They've been going to meetings for 25 years, and they still the first thing they drag out of the toolbox is, you don't understand. They don't drag out the first thing, maybe he's got a point, or maybe I should listen to him, or what's my sponsor trying to say to me, or maybe they drag out, I'm going to use my thinking on this. This man obviously doesn't understand because I'm right, and they want to argue. Alcoholics are defiant. Now, I don't know I'm defiant because this is just the way I am. It's just the way I am. I'm just defiant. I don't call it defiant. I call it me. I call it my personality. And you know, if you're an alcoholic like me, I just love my personality. I have a great... You know that defiance? That's cute. You know when I get angry and scream and yell? That's cute. You know, girls like that. You know what I mean? I somehow have figured out that I don't want to be bland. I want to be the life of the party. I want to scream. I want to yell. I want to have a personality and everything because that's like I want to be like the Kardashian girls, you know what I mean, or whatever. You know, what's that, the Jersey thing or whatever. I don't watch any of that stuff. But I mean, people are like drawn. That's what I want. I want attention. I want the person. I want the craziness and everything. That's my personality. And I come in here and they say, I got to get rid of your personality. I said, that's my personality. He says, your personality is killing you. It's like using your right hand. But the problem is, my alcoholic life seems the only normal life. So to me, it's very comfortable thinking the way I think. See, it's very comfortable for me to go to a meeting and have a guy with 30 years talking and I have 3 months. It's the most comfortable thing in the world for me to look at him and say, boy, that guy's full of crap. Because that's the way I think. Because my default position is to be a cynic. You know, it's all bad. You know, my deal is it's too good to be true. I never say it's too bad to be true. If it's bad, it must be true. You know, I'd say these are all things that with me throughout my life, and I'm right-handed, and I'm dying. And if you come up to me, as my sponsor, say, Russ, here's your problem. You got to stop using your right hand. You can never use your right hand again. Your right hand is getting you into trouble. I know you don't see the connection, but you got to trust me. If you start using your left hand, you're going to get into trouble. And at first I get mad, and at first I say, you don't understand, and at first I say, well, how could that have anything to do with it? You know, because one of the things I pride myself in as an alcoholic is I realize nobody's more brilliant than me. Nobody's smarter than me. And I had the degrees to prove it. You know what I'm talking about? Nobody's smarter than me. I prize myself in my intelligence. Now, I thought, since I had all the degrees to prove it, all the accolades and everything like that, doctorates and everything like that, that I thought I had a right to think that I was brilliant. And in certain areas, I was smart. But I've since learned, since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, that guys that dropped out of high school think they're brilliant too. That every alcoholic, guys that have been to jail 15,000 times, and you know, have been abject failures, even failures by the world's thing all their life, they also think that they know more than anybody else. Apparently, it's a characteristic of being an alcoholic to absolutely know that you're smarter than everybody. You're the smartest guy in the room and smarter than everybody. Which, when you're going down the tubes and your life is horrible, and you don't know what's going on, it's probably not a good characteristic to have the concept that you know more than anybody else, don't you think? I mean, how would you get rid of that stuff? You know, so a guy tells me I'm left-handed, do my left hand, and maybe I start using my left hand, and everything starts working out. But you want to know something? No matter how long I use my left hand, it's always going to feel to a certain extent uncomfortable for me. I'm always going to have that desire to sort of use that right-handed thinking. because that's what comes comfortable to me. This stuff doesn't come comfortable to me. And so that's what this thing is all about. And apparently there's some sort of problem I have. I'm not sure what it is. It's kind of interesting. And, you know, we all have similar stuff. I went to a meeting. You learn about this stuff just by sponsoring people and doing inventory and looking at yourself and going to meetings. And apparently one of the problems I have is this conception that, I almost hate to say it, but I'm going to say it because I don't know a better way to put it. Low self-esteem. Now, I don't understand what that's all about, that low self-esteem stuff. I don't know why you feel that you're not good enough. I know you feel you're not good enough. I know you always feel you're not good enough. Even when you think you feel like you're good enough, I know you're just lying to yourself. And you know why I know you think you're not good enough? Because I know I think I'm not good enough. And I know I'm an alcoholic and you're an alcoholic. And I know there's only like one form of alcoholism. The alcoholism says that you're not good enough. Unless you have a boob job, or you change your hair, or you get a new car, or get a new blouse, I know that if you're an alcoholic, some way, somehow, you realize that you're missing something, that there's something missing with you. I know that you compare your insides with other people's outsides, and you look at other people, and it seems to you, whether it's true or not, that they're just having an easier, that other people look like they're just having an easier time in life. They just seem to do life a lot easier than you do. Things that people do that they seem to do so easily come so difficult to you. I know that no matter how much you play the role and everything like that, you're nervous around people and you're scared of people, even though you tell me I'm not scared of people, because I know that's why you drink when you're around people, because you're scared of them. Because if you love people so much, why would you get soused every time you drink? I know you're scared of having sex. I know you're scared of dancing. I know you're scared of everything. I know in order to do all that stuff that you do, you got to get drunk because you're so scared and self-conscious because you know you're not good enough. I know that because I know you're an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you're telling me everything I know about you. I've had guys stand before me. I think I told you, guys I sponsor. Alcoholics are, and I also know you have no idea. It's like the alcoholics is an extreme example of self-overwritten right, though he usually doesn't think so. I know one of the processes in the disease is the actual problem you don't even see. And I've had people come into me and, spend a half an hour telling me about all their worries and all their problems and what they're scared of and what they're worried about and what they think is going to happen. And so after half an hour of listening, I'm scared about this, and I'm worried about that, and I'm scared about this, and I'm worried about that, and I'm scared about this, and I'm worried about that. I say, okay, let's try to deal with this. You're talking about fear. You have fear. And then they'll look me in the eye and say, no, I'm not saying that. Because for some reason, they don't want to admit they're scared. You know what I mean? Because being scared, they'll be judged. And they're not as good as. They don't want to talk about the money problem. They want to talk. 90% of the problems we don't want to talk about is we don't want to talk about them because we're scared of being judged. We're scared we're going to be, because we've... But what's the point? We've already judged ourselves as being insufficient. You know what I mean? We've already judged ourselves as being idiots. That's why we're in the shower lathering up, and that's why you hear the voice, you're an asshole. That's where the voices come from. You know, when you're in your car and you tell yourself you're no good and you're never going to make it and you're stupid. And here's the weird thing. It happens no matter what the outward circumstances are. Here I am. I did well in school. I got the bachelor's degree, I got the Juris Doctorate, I was division chief in the state's attorney's office, I married a very nice guy, had a house in Miami. From a world view, it looked from the world that as far as success is concerned, I was doing well materially and successfully the way the world judges success. In other words, anybody in their right mind would say, I'm really okay. I'm really... something? Every once in a while, I'd have those thoughts. But they were toxic thoughts. Because, the problem is, and they weren't humble thoughts, I can tell you that. Because the same mind, and this is part of that right-handed deal, the same right mind that measures yourself by what you're doing materially is the same mind that crucifies yourself if you're not doing good enough or as good as somebody else. So the same person that's saying, look at this new car, I can afford this new car, I'm better than, and as good as, is the same mind that a year later is saying, I'm such a piece of crap, everybody has a new car except for me. In other words, there's two, if you're going to start feeling good about yourself because it's something you add on in your life, that means you got to watch out because you're going to start feeling better about yourself if you can't add it on or if you lose it. And so you're struggling around, racing around like a dog chasing your tail to try to add stuff on to make yourself feel okay, and you know what the problem is? It never quite works, does it? And the only thing that really works is alcohol, is booze. And it works better than anything else. And it works fast and it's cheap. Except every once in a while you wake up and you're arrested or something like that. So it can really, you know. There's a lot of people that are not alcoholic that have the same problems we have. They really do. I mean, you can see them out there. You meet them all the time. You say, this guy's like an alcoholic, but he's not a drinker. That's his problem. He needs to start drinking. Make it in here, you know. Because they can't arrest you for driving, like, being greedy, you know, or something like that. And so we come in here, we come into this deal, and we got to change, and we don't even know what the problem, we think the problem is alcohol, and alcohol is not the problem, because it says the alcohol is just a symptom of the disease. The fact that we drink to get drunk because we can't stand ourselves sober is a symptom. It's like if a guy's always drunk, you know, I mean, if a guy's drinking, you know, 5 seconds before a guy drinks, ready for this? For the 50,000th time. 5 seconds before that happens, he's actually sober. You understand that, don't you? You know, you ever see people slipping here? I've seen them slip in 5 years. I've seen them slip in 10 years, in 15 years. You know, right before they drink, they're sober. Not sober in the sense that we're talking about emotional sober. There's some sort of problem going on. There's something, but it's not the booze. And why do they drink in the first place? They drink in the first place because they're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented. So this is a program about getting rid of that. And that was all tied into the self-centeredness. It's all tied into the ego. And here I am, I'm sitting in a room with some guy. I'm listening to his story. And he's an ex-con who never graduated elementary school and had nothing, except he's like 30 years sobriety now. And I'm listening to him, and I'm in the back of the room, and this is what he says. He says, my problem was I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I was never think but a nothing. I used to put something in my body, it turned me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. And here I am, and I'm a lawyer, and I'm a former division chief, and all that sort of stuff, and I'm about as different as this guy who spent 25 years in the state penitentiary as you could possibly be. And I said, that's exactly the way it is with me. And it had absolutely nothing to do with things and what we looked like. It had to do with what was going on with my brain and how I felt about myself. You know, so how do you change something like that? I mean, you could stop drinking. You can stop drinking, right? For a moment, for a season, for a little while. How do you change the thinking? How do you change the being pissed off or, you know, the being bored? Or you're feeling sorry for yourself? How do you change that deal? How do you change your natural predilection to say bad things about other people and make yourself feel better? You know, to while away the time if they're silenced, talking crap about other people behind your back. How do you change that when you've been doing that all your life and it's like being right-handed? How do you change that stuff? That's like drinking. We still drink and we just drink a different beverage. You can sit around in an AA room and, you know, do the same things and talk the same crap and suffer from the same disease and just drink coffee. And you know something? Not even grow spiritually, and after a year they'll give you a medallion. After 10 years they'll give you a medallion. But you know, one of the things that happens about being around for 31 years is you actually see stuff. You know, you actually see stuff. And I'm sorry to say, but I might as well tell you the truth, that the truth is a lot of people don't make it. Now, I don't know what the percentages are, and I'm not going to give you percentages, but the truth is, listen, you know, in every room I see that little chart there. You see that little chart there with the time? You guys see that? They have one in the car room. I've always thought I don't like charts like that. See, I think they ought to stretch the chart out from 1 to 28. You see, there's 28 years there, 1 to 28. And then put the names out of under 1 to 28. Now, this thing has been around for like 75 years. And then what you'll see is that there's 3 people doing 1, there's like 5 people 2, 3 people 3, 1 person 4, 1 person 5, 2 people 6. Where are all these people that were getting? So 3 people 7, 1 8, none 9. What, nobody got sober in the ninth year? None 10, 1 11. None 12, 113, none 14, 115, and then from what, 150, from 15 to 27, nobody got sober and stayed sober. Now, let me tell you something. You laugh about that. I can give you the names right now, I won't, of the guys I know that would have been in that group, but they drank. Because at 15 years after teaching the steps and talking about the steps and doing what I'm doing right up here, they started popping Xanax, they started doing other things, they started running around and doing stuff, and they end up drinking and they're dead now. That between 15 and 27. You see? What do you think? You think there's nobody in Dade County? This thing was vibrant. Between 15 and 27 that wasn't sober? And then you get up to 20. You understand what I'm saying? If you start stretching this thing out, you understand, you see over a period of time, not only the drinking of the guy. Listen, the deal here I mean, it's great when somebody stops drinking. It's wonderful when a guy comes in here in his first week, month, year, and says, I've stopped drinking, put the plug in the jug in the first 5 years, and things are changing, and stuff is happening. But I'll tell you something. You stick around here for 25, 30 years, and you see, to get to see all the people that drink after 15 years. And you start taking this thing real serious. How do you drink after 15 years? You stop growing spiritually. That's what you do. You stop growing. You don't change your personality from your personality to his personality. That's how it happens. You know, and it doesn't matter whether you like it or you don't like it or you like the concept of God or you don't. That's what this book is about. This book is very, very simple. It says a lot of stuff. You see, dealing with our type of personality, it says the same thing over and over again, almost the same way, in order to control you to do that thing you don't want to do. I'm going to read you three things in the book, but you want to say I could read 100 things in the book. It's all the same thing. Here's the three things I'm going to read. Okay? I want you to listen to this. This is in the beginning of the book, page 25. The great fact, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, which I submit to you is more than just not stopping drinking. See, they could have said we stopped drinking, right? They didn't say we stopped drinking. They said we have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream. Now, let me suggest something to you. If you have found much of heaven, and if you're rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream, how about this? You don't really have to worry much about drinking. Can you understand that? Mm-hmm. Can you get that? I know you guys go to the discussion meetings. I know there's a lot of whining, crying, thumb-sucking crybabies. I'm asking about you in particular. I know there's people going all sorts of problems. I know life is difficult. Life is tough. It's just another flipping problem, the same old crap, the same old people, the same old boss, the same old money problems. I understand that stuff. I understand life is tough and life is terrible. You understand what I'm saying? I understand that you're doing the best you can, but you're having such a hard time. I understand like it's a struggle. I understand you're hanging in there. How's it going? 14 years. Hanging in there. You know, that's what I want. One flip a day at a time. One flip a day at a time. Hanging in there. You know, I understand that, but I want to suggest to you something. That not everybody, but there were quite a few people, you know, many are called, few are chosen. They say in the Bible, they say the narrow road. There's the narrow road and the broad highway. Many find the broad highway, few find the narrow road, the road less traveled. I want to suggest something to you, to a few people, sobriety is not hanging in there. I'm not saying you never have to hang in there or you don't go through problems, quite the opposite. But believe it or not, you may not want to believe, just like you didn't want to believe that you can go from drinking to not drinking like that, and you could do that. And you didn't want to believe you could go from hating to loving like that. And you didn't want to believe that you could never give up that resentment, and you gave up the resentment. And you didn't want to believe 90% of the stuff that is not in your life now that's all of a sudden changed. Because I'm telling you that there's an incredible, exquisite, joyful life out there that is being experienced by a few people, which is just not drinking and going to meetings. I know AA says don't drink and go to meetings. Hey, it's good. I'm not talking against don't drink and go to meetings. There's some old fart in the back that's saying, yeah, but the plug and the jug and that's it. Well, you can do the two-step thing, one step and 12 step and all that stuff. But you want to know something? If you want to stick around here and be happy with your sobriety, there's a different deal they wrote about in the book. So either they were lying to us and we're a bunch of fools, or this thing is available to us. And it says we've been rocketed into heaven, and we have found much of heaven, been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, and that's the stuff I want. And those are the people I was attracted to. I wasn't attracted to just the not drinkers that had a foot. I was attracted to the men that seemed to have something more. And it says the great fact is this and nothing less. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Everybody wants to know the answers. We're all searching for the answers. You've spent thousands of dollars going to psychiatrists to get the answer. You really don't want to go you don't want to go for 5 years to try to get the answer. You want the psychiatrist to tell you the answer right now. You know, that's why we sell so many pills here. Because the greatest thing in the world is to get an answer. Doctor, what's my problem? You need to take this pill. It's a Valium deficiency. You know what I mean? Well, thank you. I'll grab onto that one because it's an answer. Okay? And so I'll take that deal. You know, you need to do this. You know, just give me an answer as to how I can do this. Give me an answer. So the big book, you know, the big book gives you an answer. And you know what it says? It says the great fact is this and nothing less. Now, I want you to think about that sentence. You know, it has very simple sentences here. We just ignore them because we ignore things we don't want to, we don't like. You know, one of the axioms that I talk about is when an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, he ignores it. He gets mad and he ignores it. That's for, not for me, and I'll go on. And so we work a program, but, you know, we do half measures. We don't know it's half measures because it's the way I do it. You do it your way, I'll do it my way. But at 20 years and 25 years, nobody gets away with anything around here. The guy at 5 years who's saying, stay out of your business, I'll live my life, you live your life, this is AA, we do whatever we want to do, which is true, you know, that's the same guy at 25 years who's sucking in the barrel of a gun or drinking. The guy who didn't want to listen because he wasn't willing to go to any length, he was ready to go to some length, but not any length. Because I can promise you, way before a person drinks in Alcoholics Anonymous who's been around for a while, he's been confronted by somebody or somebody's been put in his life to tell him, listen, you're full of crap. You're screwing up. This is what you have to do. And he's turned his back on that and he's rejected it. You can't hang out in AA and have the people in here that you have in here, you know, because there are a few people that are sober in here, emotionally sober and spiritually sober in here, without hearing somebody or running into somebody who have their act together. And in order to drink and be miserable, you almost have to turn your back on that deal and say, I'm just not going there. I'm going to decide to be defiant about this. I'm going to do that. You have to intentionally decide, I'm just not going in that area. And there's a lot of people that do that, especially when the area has to do with God. They just will do anything to avoid that God deal because we're so brilliant. And when you're brilliant, who needs God? When you know everything, when you run the universe, who needs God? You know, who needs Jesus? Who needs God? Who needs any of that stuff? You know, God, my creator, is a light bulb. You know, just do with that thing. See how it works in 25 years. You may stay sober, but I've watched them. I see what the story is. I know what the deal is. The great fact is just this and nothing less, which I think means the great fact is this and nothing less. Nothing less. That means nothing less than this fact. That means it's not less. You get it? That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today. You want to start looking as to what's going on and comparing yourself to, you know, these sober people that are having, you want this stuff? No, not many people want this stuff. Just figure out what the central fact in your life is today. What do you think about all the time? What do you go to sleep thinking about? What do you wake up thinking about? During the day, what are you thinking about? What's important to you? What's the most important thing in your life? What is the thing that you just want to talk to other people about that you just can't wait? Who is it that you're attracted to, and what are they talking about? What's the most important thing in your life? Because that'll tell me all about you. That'll tell me all about you. I have guys that I sponsor come up to me all the time. They talk to me about stuff. And I say, why are you talking to me about this stuff? I said, that's your problem. I said, you're interested in this stuff. What does this stuff have to do with the central fact? You know, you want to make the central fact in your life whether you're getting laid. You want to make the central fact in your life whether or not you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You want to make your husband or your wife the central fact in your life. You want to make your kids your central fact. You want to make your job the central fact. Go ahead and do it. I can't help you. I can't help you. You lose your job, you lose your job. You lose your life, you lose your life. You want to make your health, you want to make all that stuff the central fact, you make it all. I can't tell you not to, because I'm going to tell you to make God the central fact in your life and to pray to him and you know, seek your, have a relationship with him, see what your relationship with him is right, and all this other stuff will go away. It won't even matter. You won't even see it. You won't even be looking at it because you'll be focused on him. And you'll be loving him and you'll talk about him. And you look at me and you say, I don't want to hear that God stuff. How can I help you? Even though I'm telling you the truth after 31 years of doing this, how can I help you if you don't want to do it? If you want to still be out there worshiping Maybelline or Macy's or Bloomingdale's or whatever you want to worship, whatever's on the billboards, what they show you in the movies, it's not real. None of that stuff is real. Look at Whitney Houston. It's not, nothing's real. It doesn't even work for the people that make it. Talent won't do it. Brains won't do it. You know, what do you want me to tell you? I mean, it's so clear. It's so clear. There's a line in the Bible, in the book of Romans, that says, it's so clear what God says to us all around us that there is no excuse. You can't make the excuse, I didn't know. I wasn't told. I didn't see. It's all over the deal. But people are so clouded. Whitney Houston, no matter how wonderful she was, and she was wonderful, and she's a wonderful singer, it's so sad. You know what I mean? And I saw it, and it's so sad. It's terrible. She was an alcoholic and an addict, right? And now what are we doing? We're celebrating her life. You know, I had a sponsor. You know, he was sober for 35 years. He helped hundreds and hundreds of people. They didn't celebrate his life. You know why? Because that's what the world does. You can die of alcoholism. You can be slowly. Everybody's watching it happen, and you just get a big celebration. Like there was no problem here. We just cover it up, and everything. Somebody's crazy. It's either in the way they look at things. It's either me. Somebody's crazy. Somebody's not getting what's going on here. You know, maybe it's me. It's probably me. Anything for a buck. Anything for ratings. And what happens is we're alcoholics and we don't think good about ourselves and we think we're pieces of shit. You know, if Brad Pitt thinks it's okay, then we must think it's okay. Because we're followers and we're not leaders. Mm-hmm. And so it says the great fact is just this and nothing less. The central factor of our lives today is the absolute certainty. That's like not we think. The absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can't do for ourselves. He's doing that. As a matter of fact, after the promises, it says the promises says the same thing. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And they only use the great fact. They use something called the tremendous fact, which is the same thing as the great fact, by the way. And then the next thing they say, and then right in the middle of that, and then they say, I'm sorry, on page 29, two pages later, they say the following. Further on, clear-cut reductions are showing how we have recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. The way he not the way he drank, not the problems he had in, the way he established his relationship with God. Then you go in the chapter of the agnostics, and the only thing they tell you in the chapter of agnostics is if you don't like the God thing, that sort of thinking has to be abandoned. Get over it. And then you finally get to the back of the book, on the last page of the book, and you know what it talks about again? It talks about the great fact. It says, he will show you how, he says, it says, he is going to show you, God is going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave. You didn't even know you crave fellowship. You crave fellowship. Even as you're denying, I don't need anybody, I don't care what people think about me, you crave fellowship. You will fellowship with somebody. If you're not fellowshipping with me or fellowshipping with somebody in the program that's lifting you up, you will fellowship with pornography. You will fellowship with your with Facebook. There's nothing wrong with Facebook. I'm on Facebook, but I mean you will fellowship with things that'll drag you down. And you will fellowship with people. You will fellowship with people in your life that is just hurting you and dragging you down, and then go to AA meetings because you crave them because you're addicted to them, and then you go to AA meetings and complain about that relationship. And when your sponsor says, well, stop that relationship and hang out with these people, you'll say, I can't do that. She's my best friend. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. These are the founders. They didn't even know much. God will constantly disclose more to you and to him. To us, ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. Because when he's the central part of your life, what you're doing is thinking about him. You know, it even says when you do the third step, it says being all powerful, he'll give us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his work well. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. He's the great fact for us. This whole book is about getting close to him, which is probably why when you get the 11th step, they say, okay, now let's get closer. So what does the 7th step have anything to do with this? Well, here's the bad news. Now, the good news is it's doable. You can have a relationship with him. It'll solve all your problems, even the fear problem. It says as soon as we start linking up with him, fear starts going away. It says in the book, you know, what's the bad news? Well, here's the bad news. In the 6th step, one of the things it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And then it says this. It says, a well-loved clergyman says, here's the standard. A well-loved clergyman, you know, clergyman, we're not supposed to talk about clergymen in the Bible, we're not supposed to talk about the Bible, even though it was all over the big book and everything like that, and they studied the Bible beforehand, and we're supposed to lose prejudice even against organized religion and see what they're right. But in any event, it says, a well-loved clergyman says, any man, who repeatedly tries to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator, of God, is a man who can clearly be called a man, you know, that's trying to separate himself rather than a boy. So the standard in the 6th step is trying to become like God, almost God. I know it's trying to become. Now, do we ever become perfect? No. And I'm the last one. I'm not even close to that deal. You know what I mean? And, you know, but the bottom line is the attitude, the 6th step attitude is focusing on him, looking at him, trying to be more like him, hanging out with people that are talking about him, that are worshiping him, that are that are focused on him and see how they are and what's going on in their life and trying to become like that. Now, try to sell that to AA. You know, this ain't Well People's Anonymous. This is a group of people. It's like cat. It's sort of like, you can't even say it's like cat. It's like a group. It's like herding cats. You've got a group of people that are defiant and self-centered and think they're smarter than everybody else. And no matter what you say to them, they want to go in the opposite direction. So is it any doubt that when you see this stuff, and you clearly, I'm not saying any novel stuff, nothing I said here, you know, I mean, to throw away what I said here means you'd have to rip up the entire big book. Because I can promise you there's nothing I said in here that isn't said in the big book. So if you have a problem with something I said, you don't have a problem with me. I'm a creature. After 31 years, I am a product, a result of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing I say is original. You know, somebody will come up and he says, I love the way you say this. And I said, you mean when I said, you know, rarely have I seen a person fail, or when you say, you know, see to your relationship? He says, yeah, you mean when I read the book. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You know what I mean? I said, nothing I'm saying is outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's just that, you know what it is? It's just that it's not said around here with the kind of emphasis. We sort of like slide. We sort of give this stuff lip service and then stick around and have group therapy and talk about our problems. You know, God forbid somebody should get in here and get serious about this stuff and says, I think this guy is serious. He wants me to actually, you know, like go to his church or worship this thing or do that stuff. And, you know, what can I tell you? You ought to read the book and see what it says about that stuff. I'm not even going to go into that. And so that's what the sixth step says. It says we've got to grow in his image. We've got to grow out of our personality and grow into his personality. The personality of our creator. You know, the way he is, the way he treats people. So what's this have to do with the seventh step? Well, here's the bad news. But it's sort of good news. It actually, here's the deal. It depends upon how you look at it. Isn't that right? Doesn't it all sort of depend the way how you look at it? You see, there may be people, you don't drink anymore, right? Most of you people don't drink. There's probably guys out there and gals out there that would look at you and they say, why don't you come to the party and have a drink? And you smile at them and you say, no, that's okay, I don't drink anymore. And they say, you don't drink anymore? He says, no, I don't drink anymore. He says, I'll be home with my grandkids. I'll be home with my kids. He says, I can't believe you don't drink. He says, man, I feel sorry for you. And you're thinking, man, I don't. I'm so grateful. I'll be with my grandkids. You know, I was sitting with some guy that I was 12-stepping, you know, talking about the program. We had just gone to a meeting. We were sitting at Denny's. We just came out of the meeting, and we were having coffee, and, you know, we were just having a great time. And the guy said, looked at me, and he said, hey, that was great. That was a lot of fun. He says, what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was having a great time. I didn't have the heart to tell him that, listen, buddy, I don't know how to tell you this, but sitting with me and Denny's having coffee, that's pretty much the tip of the iceberg in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's pretty much it, you know what I mean? You know, this is the saddest thing. I almost hate saying this, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I've been all over the world. I've done a lot of stuff, you know what I mean? And there's nothing I like better than being with a bunch of guys in AA. Or a bunch of guys and gals in AA, or being here tonight, or something like this. I mean, you never know until it happened to you, but I mean, I could be anywhere tonight. You know, I got the wherewithal where I can be at other places and do other things, and this is my recreation. This is what I love to do. This is who I want to be with. And I've met guys and sponsored guys in AA that are multimillionaires 10, 20, 50 times over. And you wouldn't know it, you know what I mean? They just sit around tables, drink coffee, because this is what they like to do. They could be in Paris, they could be in Rome, they could be flying all over the planet Earth. You know, they could be at a high rise, they could be at a Hollywood party and everything, and this is what they like to do. This is their life, their happiest clams. I guess it all depends on how you look at it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because they feel good about themselves, and they're satisfied with themselves, and they need to add nothing. And as a matter of fact, I don't know how many people have been here long enough so they realize how horrible cocktail parties are. You know, I mean, I'm terrible at cocktail parties. The last time I went to a cocktail party was judicial reception, and I said something to somebody, and they'll probably hate me for the rest. Because I talk AA. I don't know how to do small talk. You know what I mean? I don't know how to, you know, I don't know. I can't say, how about them dolphins? You know, I can't. My eyes curl up, you know? You know, somebody comes up to me and says, how are you doing? I'm doing fine. He says, how are you doing? He says, I'm doing okay. I'm a little worried about this. And I say, oh, that's because you're scared. You know? I think I'm talking to a sponsee, you know. Yeah, you're scared. You know, that's just fear. And you can do that. You pay me. That's what I'm used to talking. I'm just trying to help them out. Next thing you know, they take their drink, they turn their back, and they walk away. And they're whispering to somebody in the back, who is this guy telling me I'm in fear? Yeah, you don't know what it's like. You try it. Go to one of these deals. You know what I mean? They're all scared. That's why they're drinking, sitting there, telling everybody how great they are and how wonderful they're doing, you know? God forbid somebody would think they're not doing wonderful. So what happens? We come in here, and how do we get mold? How do we get in the image and likeness of our Creator? Now, this is the good news. This is how it happens in the seventh step. Through 1,000 forms, this is how we get the new perspective, 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final question of our self-sufficiency. What happens is as you look to God, and as I liken it to the car, I call it the AA car wash. You start off dirty at the beginning, and you go through the car wash. And what happens is there's 1,000 guys in there with giant mallets. And they just, and you're on the, you know, that little, what do they call it? The little carriage, the thing that carries you along. And the thing is they just beat the crap out of you. And they're beating you, and they're killing you, and you're squirming, and you're lying, and all you do is just hang on to that deal for dear life. But you're just, and the carriage is God. You're just staring at God. You just know as long as you hang on to God, you're going to be okay. And by the time you get to the end of the car wash, they're beating you, but it feels like a Swedish massage. So you're saying, hey, listen. And by the time you get to the end, you don't feel anything at all. You get out and say, listen, I think I'll try that sucker again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's what it says. It says, we, as long as we look at God and we hang out here and we fellowship, we get the right way, you know, we'll get hurt, we'll get into pain, but eventually, because you know how stupid we are. We're not exactly, you know, I don't know about you, but I didn't have like one glass of ice, you know, I didn't have one bad Saturday night and come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to get beaten down. Well, you know what happens? You know, we don't want to change in a certain direction. There's a certain thing we don't want to do. We don't want to look that. We don't want to grow. We don't want to go a little bit further. You know something? God will see to us that life messes us up. To the extent that we don't want to live by spiritual values, to the extent that we don't want to do what we're mandated to do or God is pushing us to do, to the extent that we turn away from that bozo in the room that says, why don't you try this or why don't you try that, to just the extent we do that, we will keep on getting the same problem over and over again, either with the same person or different people, until we finally get to the point where we're at our own tether. We should sort of learn, just like, you know, at the end of our tether, the end of our rope, and hopefully say, I can't stand anymore. And then finally, we give in and we do that one thing that our sponsor told us to do or somebody told us to do 10 years ago, you know, and everything starts to work out. It says, this is great, and all of a sudden we're the greatest proponents of it through the value of suffering. We just saw, and after a while, you know, this thing was modeled after the book of James. You know, I don't know if you know this, AA was modeled after the book of James. The first paragraph of the book of James says, rejoice. How do you like this one? You talk about a change of attitude. It says, rejoice when you have trials. Rejoice when you have trials. Listen, what do we do in AA if we have trials and tribulations? We complain, right? You complain. You know what the Bible says, James says, and you know what this book says? It says, rejoice. Say, this is what you say. You say, I know you find this hard to believe, but you say, man, this is horrible. Thank you, God. Thank you, because I know you're doing, on the other end of this is like good stuff. It hurts like crap now, but I know there's good stuff. And here's what it says in step 7. And I'll just read this and then we'll close up. It says this. It talks about our striving and we're always trying to run away from problems instead of meeting them, instead of going through the pains. It says, this perceived perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Have your eyes become open to the incredible values there are from having the crap beat out of you? You know, have you gone to meetings, discussion meetings, and saying, I lost my job, they're kicking me out of my house, I just discovered I have cancer, I'm so blessed. Isn't this wonderful? No, I guess not. Well, not quite. You're not ready for that. You're not ready for that. Well, you can have the other attitude. Just feel sorry for yourself. Just feel sorry for yourself. That'll make it all go away and make it better. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Running from pain and problems or complaining about it. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. See, you thought this book was all good. It is all good news. Depends upon how you look at it. Escape by the bottle was always our solution, or escape by, you know, love or romance or buying something was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. And what we learned through here is that no pain, no gain. You know, to the extent you run through pain, and you know what will happen is you'll run up to a sponsor, or you'll run up to somebody here, and you'll want the solution. I went up to my sponsor. When I was 9 years sober, they took away my credit cards. Apparently, I don't know whether you know this, if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. Do you know that? I was a math major. I didn't figure that out. Yeah. Because I wanted to live a dishonest life. I didn't know it was, you know, it says you got to be honest in here, but it's not honest if you use a credit card to buy something where you don't have the money. I spent more money buying things I didn't need for people, to impress people I didn't like with money I didn't have. You know what I mean? And that's a dishonest life. That's buying stuff and using stuff and having stuff that you don't deserve to have because you're not living that lifestyle. So you're living a dishonest life. But to me, it's just charge it. You know what I mean? And then complain about it later on. You understand? But don't feel so bad because the entire country has that same problem. Congress has that same problem. Okay? It's called greed and lust and not wanting to give up. So I went up to him and I told him about my money problems, and this is what he said to me. He said, Russ, I have a solution to it. Anybody here have money problems? You would like more money and everything like that? I'm going to solve it for you right now because he told me the solution. He said, you got money problems, Russ? He says, this is the solution. He says, earn more or spend less. I said, well, what's my third option? I said, I'm earning as much as I can earn, and I know what spend less meant. That means, like, get rid of the car. Like, get rid of the Cadillac and get an old, you know, but I didn't want to get rid of the Cadillac. I didn't want to stop going to fancy restaurants. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that. Well, you know what that is? You want to know what that is? That's alcoholism. That's drinking. They should take my medallions away from me. Listen to me. I'm not drinking scotch, but I'm addicted. I'm addicted to greed. I'm addicted to things. I'm sitting here and I'm destroying my life through worry and pain and agony and vomiting all over AA meetings talking about destroying my life because I can't give up a car. What is that if that's not bondage or an idol? Or I can't give up a woman. Or I can't give up a man. Or I can't give up a relationship. Or I can't. What is that if that isn't alcoholism in the purest sense of the word? If that isn't the dis-ease, you know, so that you're restless, irritable, and discontented. It's all about alcoholism. And I didn't want to go there. I said, what are you talking about? There's got to be a, because I live in the land of wishful thinking. What's my third option? Where can I have everything I want and live like a millionaire, even though I'm not, you know what I mean? And I don't have to change. And you know what God does? God does a great thing. He comes on down and takes away your credit cards. He takes away your credit. He takes away your car. He takes away your house. He does stuff. And you come in here and you complain, and eventually you like accept it and say, well, I guess it's the way it's supposed to be. You talk to your sponsor. You start thinking, well, this is what had to happen in order to get me right size. You know, so it's not such a bad thing. I found an apartment student. Now I'm living with it. And you start talking about how all of a sudden your whole attitude about how you spend in your life has changed, but it didn't change because you wanted it. It changed because, just like it changed, well, you didn't stop drinking because you wanted it. You stopped drinking because you had no choice. So all of a sudden you start changing because you have no choice. And it puts you in that position, right? But you don't drink because you're focused on him, because you have hope. Because you know no matter what happens, all things work out for him who loves God. And he's never going to let you down. And that's the deal. You get it? Does it make any sense? Okay, next week, some other stuff. Bye-bye.